Right. Contributions or questions, please. Oh, Holly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how we mentioned the Money Loves Society, Matthew Walton. I'm friends with him on Facebook. And like Howard, I've read the book, and it's excellent. You know, he says he's got 20,000 followers. He doesn't mention socialism, communism, Marxism. He's coming from the same as us, a moneyless world of free access. There's another guy, Jake Ambrose. I don't know if anybody knows him on Facebook. He took his ideas from that pamphlet Paul Breeze wrote. He's an ex-member of the party. And he's got over 30,000 followers. You know, so there's a lot of people out there who are, wouldn't call themselves Marxists or communists, but their idea of it, that it's a post-capitalist society, is exactly like what ours is.
Paddy?
Just a thought. An argument for actually trying to reclaim the term socialist, the term Marxist, is because it's the first thing we're going to get accused of by our opponents. So they'll call us that anyway. So I don't think we can avoid those terms. And we should probably just, you know, that's an argument for leading with it and saying, look at all these charlatans who've called themselves these terms. That's why you hate it. But you hate it because you've been conned. We're the real thing. And try and reclaim it that way, because we'll get accused anyway.
Do you want to come back?
What I'd say there is that if people say to us what you said, oh, you're just socialist, you're just Marxist, say, actually, yeah, these are socialist and Marxist ideas, and we don't deny that. It's just that the point I'm making is we shouldn't trust it. I mean, if they themselves come to that conclusion, to that false conclusion, and challenge it with it, fine. You know, we shouldn't say, no, we're not socialist or Marxist. But on the other hand, let's use such terms. Let's be sort of Marx or socialist light in the way we sort of put our ideas across. Let's give people the substance, if you like, rather than the terminology.
Simon?
On your review of the use of Marx in the Standard over the years, well, I've got some personal experience of that, because I know that the editorial committee, for probably 20 years looking back on it, has deprecated theoretical articles, and that's going to kill your references of Marx straight off. And the second thing is that ecology and socialism pamphlet, I was actually asked to rewrite the introduction or preface, I can't quite remember which, a few years ago. I actually did that. I didn't just change the words and a couple of references to like data machines or something which should be updated from the 1990s. But I actually tried to make it a little more systematic. At which point, as soon as I handed it in, I got hurried, well, we're not interested in that anymore, and they just like reprinted it as was. So there is a deprecation within the party's editorial system of not just Marxism, but I think systematisation beyond the mosaic. The second thing is, and this is where there was that program, I couldn't disagree more. Well, I couldn't disagree more about the notion of trying to turn our idea, trying to make our ideas so anodyne, which is what we're trying to do, that we can present them as like a civil service proposal. It's like, this is so obvious that I don't understand why this wasn't in the Planning Act of 1938 or something like that. Yeah. So why are you still using money when, so like, just by tweaking this and doing this, then we could run our society in this way? Whereas any kind of that assumes that there is not a class struggle relationship. At the moment that we try to implement ideas that favour ourselves rather than the current class in power, we're going to find exactly how transgressive we are. And to be honest, if we did put ideas out, you know, and we read them out in Highgate, then we would find Marx climbing out of his own grave, zombie fashion, to eat what limited brains he found we had left. If a revolutionary argument does not present itself as transgressive, then what value is it? And to be honest, I think that, well, Paddy, I think your video on Marxism, I thought was very good. At the same time, I think if we did want to actually encourage the working class with a video about our ideas on socialism, it would be much better starting with John Waters and Divine, because they might actually come up with something interesting.
Do you want to come back on that before I ask Paddy to talk?
Yeah, I love your vocabulary, Simon.
I know you first one did.
Sorry for being too anodyne and not being transgressive enough. Oh dear. Well, first of all, I can't speak for the SSPC, what they decide to do or don't decide to do. I mean, I can't believe that the SSPC is sort of somehow anti-Marx, knowing the people who are on it, to be honest.
I said anti-theoretical articles.
Comments to that even. Okay. And I don't think I was saying that we shouldn't sort of put forward that there's a class struggle going on. I mean, you know, so some of the writers I quoted from made it absolutely clear there was a class struggle, but seemed to be able to do so without specifically using the word socialism or Marxism. So, you know, I don't think these things are mutually exclusive. I really don't. But, okay, well, that's all I'll say for the moment on that.
Just to sort of respond to a couple of points Simon was making, I can speak for the SSPC and also for the EC when Simon's redraft of the pamphlet came up. So first of all, on the SSPC, that's an easy one. Of course we don't deprecate, you know, theoretical articles. And we've had a long-standing policy on the SSPC of, you know, a light touch with the Marxist quotes. Years ago, there used to be a thing where our articles were absolutely larded with Marx quotes every paragraph. It got to be a real pain. So, yeah, we don't like thrusting Marxism down people's throats in quotes. It just makes us look, you know, like dogmatists. It doesn't help the argument. So there's that. We don't deprecate theoretical articles. I mean, there's plenty of theoretical articles that go in. I think sometimes the view I take is if it's so theoretical that I can't understand it, the readers are probably not going to understand it either. And if the other editors also can't understand it, that's where the problem arises. So sometimes you have to sort of, you know, do a lot of debating about what's being said here. So just a quick thing on the Sapper pamphlet, Socialism's Practical Alternative. So Simon did a really good new introduction to that. I really enjoyed it. It was sort of very fiery and with his elegant turn of phrase. I really enjoyed it, but the EC overall had difficulties with it, probably because it was a bit overstated at certain places, in certain places, things like that. But that led on to a further discussion that the body of the pamphlet, which Simon hadn't really done that much with. This is a 35-year-old pamphlet talking about a future society with a level of technology that was known in 1990. So it was felt that what it needs is a complete rewrite, which I am saddled with doing when I can find the time. So that's going forward. But I'm sorry that Simon said, feels like it's a sort of, you know, short shrift. It wasn't intended that way at all.
Okay.
I'd just say that was a direct quote that I received when I was a potential writer, and this was back before I left for Qatar in 2012. So this was in that period prior to 2012, when I was a prospective writer. I received that from certainly from Adam to say that really the editorial policy was to have little or no theoretical articles.
I've never heard him say that, or anybody else on the. I've never heard that being stated.
Do you want to say anything before I ask Bill to talk?
Just to say that I think you were saying, Paddy, that the Standard used to be larded with quotes from Marx and so on. If people still read, as I do, the Socialist Studies publication, I still subscribe to it, you know, the reformed SPGB, it's the same, it's still the same. They're unreadable. They really are. They really are unreadable. There's an article about something happening at the moment, and suddenly there's a quote from Marx or Engels. It didn't work. It didn't work at all.
Okay, Bill?
Just firstly, I mean, I've been led to believe as a standard writer that topical articles are preferred and theoretical ones undesired. And also not to end every article with only in world socialism, which really knackers my writing style. A quick point: the vast majority of biologists, overwhelming majority, would describe themselves as Darwinists, but they don't feel any particular urge to quote Darwin in the voluminous writings. Mm. And so by the same analogy, Marxism has the same position for us. We acknowledge his contributions. I'd say that there's, you know, occasionally the question comes up of what is an actual Marxist. And I'd say that as Keith said last night, you know, his massive amounts of writing can be boiled down to two things. One, a substantive and accurate description of how we are inevitably exploited within capitalism and the mechanics of that. And a general idea that the working class needs to take political action, organised political action, in order to stop that. And those two things are what would constitute the core, at the heart of Marxism. And the party has took those two things on board, and in fact, in many ways, made them its own. And then I think we are in a position where we can say, so what if Marx said that? This is what we say, and this is our analysis, reading on from Marx. So something that bits of, you know, Mark Adam was saying this morning, where Marx and Engels were talking about revolutionary terror. I think we would absolutely eschew revolutionary terror to court as a method, and even if we were finding ourselves wanting to make a bourgeois revolution in this day and age. But I think that's our tradition, and that's what we have brought and added to the knowledge that Marx brought into the workers' movement. And as Adam said, you know, the workers' movement would not be created and invented by Marx, but certainly he contributed some very important ideas that we still implicitly apply, even if we're not being explicit about it.
John, say anything, Howard?
No.
Dougie?
Yeah, I mean, just the organisations that talk about moneyless society, how do they expect to achieve that, really? You know, are the Democrats, you know, are they talking about a political change in a class struggle, or are they talking about some sort of way that a moneyless society can come about without that? I'm just interested in that, yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting, and that's an area in which we sometimes quite often differ from them, because quite a few of these organisations don't see it coming via politics, so to speak. They see it coming via, from below, yes, but via sort of, you know, small organisation, a small setting up and doing things for themselves and so on, and becoming semi-autonomous and so on and so forth. And this then gradually, the people seeing this and deciding, yes, that's a good idea, we'll do that as well, etc. I find that stuff a bit utopian, to be honest. I don't think it could possibly happen like this. That's very much the line that Anitra Nelson takes in her books, Life Without Money, etc. And when I reviewed first her most recent one for the Socialist Standard, I spent the last couple of paragraphs sort of saying that yes, we agree with what she wants, but we think her way of trying, her thinking it can be achieved, is unviable for this, that, and the other reason. What we need is, you know, the kind of thing that Bill just talked about, which is what a lot of our articles end with. We need it to be done politically. Via parliamentary means, democratic elections and so on, certainly if those are available. So, yes, it's true that a lot of these organisations, writers and organisations and groups have got a sort of different view of how this can be achieved. There's the famous Zeitgeist, which we probably all heard of, who seem to have the same aim as us. Zeitgeist led by, what's his name?
Peter
Joseph. Yeah. Doesn't seem to want to have anything to do with politics at all. Yeah, in many ways, if you look at the stuff that Zeitgeist has produced over the years, you know, there's nothing we can really object to. But when it comes to actual political action to bring it about, they simply don't want to know. So that's definitely an obstacle that we face, and that it's hard to convince people of. And that's the case with quite a few of these internet sites, which seem to be sort of supporting the same kind of thing as us, but at the same time, you know, not in a way not going as far as we do anyway, in terms of, you know, the action we see as necessary.
Paddy?
Just to add to that, I wrote to Peter Joseph a couple of years ago. I managed to have a communication with him saying effectively what you just said. And was it the case that, you know, he sort of didn't want to know us because of the nomenclature, you know, the sort of the vocabulary? He basically said, yeah, I don't want to go anywhere near anybody who calls themselves Marxists. So that was his view. But I think Zeitgeist is a bit of a busted flush these days, you know. The other thing I was going to mention was, I don't know, some older members here will probably remember this, the Guildford branch affair back in the 80s, you'll remember this. And so we had a branch that was actually arguing, they put out a paper called, The Road to Socialism. Do you remember that? And this was arguing that precisely what some of these books are arguing, that the socialism will grow from the ground up in little sort of cells that will multiply and then merge together and it'll all do this, and you wouldn't need a political revolution, it will be organic. And this became a bit of an affair in the party, partly because we didn't have email back then, and communications were glacial, and they were in the form of circulars that went round. So this circular went round, and then some anti-Guildford circulars went round. It all got a bit heated, and Guildford branch ended up resigning. And Robin Cox actually was one of the people in Guildford, but he's back with us now. So, but yeah, so we explored these ideas in our own party as well, and sort of explicitly rejected them.
Sorry, I don't know your name, but...
Thanks, Howard, and thanks for this handout. I'm kind of reminded of, you know, Luxembourg critiquing the trade union, the German trade union movement for their policemen's, like, materialism. I wonder if you could speak a little bit about, you know, both of these talks now, we had one about 1917 and now about Marxism, and in both, like, both are kind of presented as, like, an obstacle to potentially transforming society. So I wonder if you could talk about that, because I wonder why Marxism was taken up in the middle of the 19th century. You already had like these utopian socialisms like in the earlier period. So what role was Marxism playing that was necessary? And also, I'm curious to know, like, obviously the SPGB affirmed that socialism has to be taken up by the proletariat itself, like it can't be transformed by any other class, but it wouldn't have to be conscious. And so what role does consciousness play in this? Can it just be, can socialism be taken up unconsciously?
Well, I would say consciousness is all. It plays a supreme role. I mean, you know, there has to be socialist consciousness on the part of those who decide to bring about socialism. Otherwise, couldn't possibly work. I mean, that's ultra important, I'd say. I mean, and I wasn't saying that we had to sort of dismiss Marxism or keep people away from it. What I was saying is that it has a tendency to put people on, because of the associations that it's developed, the unfortunate associations over the years, over the decades, almost over the centuries now, amongst people who... Well, both amongst people who know nothing about it, they've just heard the word, but also amongst people who know something about it, but have, misconstrued it, shall we say. So, you know, this isn't an argument that let's forget about Marx and simply be the non-Marxist Socialist Party of Great Britain, but let's be, let's be the Socialist Party of Great Britain. And if people bring up the question of Marx, we say, well, yeah, he had a lot of good ideas, many of which we'd go along with. But, he did live in the 19th century, conditions were different. So, maybe some of the things we do have to be a bit different. So, just to go back to the question of consciousness, it's absolutely essential. Otherwise, you're almost in a Leninist situation, aren't you? Whereby you've got a small minority of conscious people leading those who aren't class conscious, but will nevertheless somehow be prepared to go along with you. And couldn't possibly work. So I'd repeat, consciousness is all.
Can I take Edmund next? Because Sam, you've had a couple of goes.
It's just a minor point, really. Thank you. Interesting talk. I'm looking at number 31 on the hand there. which I think is one of the groups online that you were saying don't use the word Marx much or the word Marxism much. But the snippet that you've given us from this group exists to support the abolition of the power of capital through the transformation of the means of production from private to social ownership. It's the only issue by the working class and anti-capitalist worldwide. Well, somebody who hasn't had any exposure, not maybe to the words of Marx, somebody who hasn't had any exposure to Marxist politics will not know what any of that means. The means of production, the power of capital, social ownership, working class emancipating ourselves, these are all Marxist terms. And so even if they don't use the word Marx, that is, you couldn't get a more dense bit of Marxist-ese than that. And I'm not saying that to attack it, but I'm saying that if you really wanted to write for an audience who are coming to these ideas for the first time, then the word Marxism is not the most difficult word in that. People are not going to know what any of that means. So maybe it is. Maybe it's possible, and certainly you need to be thinking about new ways to make things comprehensible and make them avoid unnecessary misunderstandings and so on. But I would not take that as an answer.
Do you want to say something else?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I hold my hands up there. Yeah.
Simon?
Can I just jump in, Simon?
Jacqueline, yeah.
Sorry, Joe.
No, it's okay.
What you just said, no one would understand means of production and blah, 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 blah. I was like that when I came to the party. I didn't know what you were talking about. But I've gone to a meeting. And the person who was speaking, who happened to be Marie's brother of the other, which you mentioned earlier, who split, we went to Conway Hall. He was doing a talk, and I said, well, what? You didn't mention ships and mines. He said, oh no, I did at the beginning of the talk. It's, we always, if we mention certain words, we don't actually spell out what those words mean, usually in a talk or places like this, when we're talking to the public. And most people, if they're sensible, took time to come to a talk, if they didn't know something, they can ask, if they haven't already been allowed to hear what we're saying. I'll be strict on that.
Keith, did you put your hand up? I'm sorry, am I dreaming? Okay, Simon.
Just to say, we keep thinking that it's us who have to thread the eye of the needle with our language in order to make a revolution happen. Whereas I don't think that's the case at all. There was a quote by Eisenhower, for D-Day. I mean, the Americans actually had to invent a whole discipline, I think it's called operational research, or how to move logistics. But Eisenhower, he said that he found that plans were almost useless, but planning was essential. And I think that we should look at our operation as political parties in the same way. There is no evidence that we are the revolutionary agent. We have to expect wider changes in the economy to be to be the revolutionary agent, at which point we would all be released to do our thing. So I think that we should concentrate on our own ability to operate in a wide variety of situations and try to understand the world as clearly as possible without thinking it's for us to take a snapshot of the world as we see it today and try and make a Janet and John of it, which seems to be seems to very much be the mood of the meeting, to try and bring things down to language that the working class has rather than the working class that comes to party meetings has.
I entirely agree with you that we are not the revolutionary agent. In fact, capitalism is the revolutionary agent. Yeah, no. Absolutely. Yeah, couldn't agree more. But you know, hopefully, we play some small part in that, and we do the best we can to play that part. So it's a question of how we do that best. And different people have different views. Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. And just a quick follow-up.
Okay,
sure. Pointing out there was a little post hoc that if you look at the progress of party membership to the party use of terms like Marx and Marxism, you find that instead of it being a benefit, it seems to be a hindrance. As we have reduced the level of marks in our productions, we've gone down from 500 to 300.
Yeah, but that's not the reason. That's not the reason, is it, though? No. I mean, there are no doubt multiple reasons, but whether that's one of them is anyone's guess. Yeah.
Danny?
The thing about Marx and Marxism is that Marx wasn't a Marxist. He was a socialist, a communist, if you like. And the other thing I'd like to mention is that the capitalist class has given the workers the vote. Purely and simple to say, all right, you voted for it, now put up with it. Now, that's a weapon we should use, democracy. Because with democracy, it's an amazing system. One, as I said, democracy can be where everyone, all of us, get an equal opportunity to affect the decisions made in society. And the other thing, it's a fantastic way of sharing ideas. So that's why I think we should use the democracy that capitalism's given us, like, you know, you voted for it, you put up with it, and use that they've given us the tools to slit their throat, if you like, to be graphic about it. So why not use them?
Absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree more with that.
Richard?
Yeah, I was just really kind of thinking about this as you were talking, Howard. And always in the back of my mind is the question of what the function of the Socialist Party of Great Britain actually is. And that function is going to change according to the circumstances in which we're actually operating. Right now, we're an incredibly small party. At the moment, I think our function is to, first of all, as far as we can, grow the party, and secondly, to preserve our particular view of what socialism is and what it could be and the way in which we need to get there. So that's our current function. As time goes on, and hopefully the working class kind of starts to get the idea that capitalism is not going to meet its needs, and there is going to be a sort of a desire for sort of broader understanding and broader ideas. What's actually going to happen, now this is my guess of course, but what I suspect is going to happen very strongly, is that there is going to be a marketplace of socialist ideas. And as the working class start looking for alternatives to capitalism, we are going to be then in competition with other groups like Leninist groups, with reformist groups, etc., much, much more strongly. And so at that point, our function starts to become different. We have got to get out there in a much more active way to promote socialist ideas, what we think is the way that socialism is going to come about, and the dangers that these other groups actually posing in terms of what becomes workable as a socialist ideal. So as time develops, our function develops. And so I don't see much of a problem at the moment in terms of what we're doing. When I'm kind of trying to promote socialism, I try to avoid the word Marx, Marxism, and even socialism. Not completely. I don't think that it's possible to avoid it completely. But I tend to sort of try and sort of tone it down in that way, in the sort of the kind of very much in the kind of sort of ethos of the party as I perceive it at the moment, because I think that it actually bears the strongest fruit in terms of winning sort of an understanding of what we're about among members of the working class, etc., etc. I spend stupid amounts of time online with American political websites, and where there is a debate between the right and the left, between sort of neoliberals and libertarians, etc., and so on and so forth. And we're living in this, what is it, does seem to be, in fact, a post-truth society. And I am constantly brought up against people who don't actually want to understand what I'm saying, All they want to do is they want to use the terminology I use, Marxism, socialism, communism, if I use those, class struggle, that sort of thing, if I ever use them, and turn it against me on the basis that they can actually recruit opinions and emotional loyalty to people who are kind of who have been programmed to think very much of socialism in terms of the Soviet bloc, China, North Korea, etc., etc. And it really then, as soon as I become identified and labelled with those labels, there is nothing that I can say because I am simply completely overpowered by this process socialist union, Soviet Union, there's sort of millions who died, and sort of this is socialism and all kinds of stuff like that. So I don't have a problem with not using that terminology very closely. And when I do write articles, like for example Standard, I will always define my terms very clearly, but without sort of using that too much. So I think in our current terms, we are doing the right thing. It's really because we are achieving what we need to achieve. First of all, survival. Literally, survival. I mean, literally, we're dwindling as a party. We have to survive in order to be able to promote these ideas and continue to promote them into the future, because we think they're important, because we think they are the way to socialism, and there are dangers for more authoritarian or ways or getting sidetracked down reformist lines. So, yeah.
No, I just wanted to say, yes, what is our function, and really our function at the moment, is to stay alive. It's remarkable, really, that we've stayed alive for, 121 years, or whatever it is. And not only have we stayed alive, we've produced the Socialist Standard every single month during that period. It's quite remarkable, really, how many organisations have sort of seen quite strong and then sort of decline, and then they stop publishing. I mean, I used to get an anarchist newspaper called Freedom, some of you know about that. I was a subscriber for many years. Gradually it started to be less regular, and they disappeared. And there have been lots of others like this. So it reflects quite remarkable credit on the party and the people in it that they've continued over such a long period in keeping the idea alive. So if somebody had said to me, you know, what's your purpose, I would have said, to an outsider, I wouldn't say to an outsider anything, our purpose is to stay alive. I would say our purpose is to keep the idea alive. However, since the internet, it's clear that, you know, we're not the only people putting this idea. Before the internet, you thought, well, nobody else has thought of this, people don't want it at the moment, but at least we're keeping the idea alive until such time as, you know, capitalism brings about a situation in which people do want it. But in fact, there are other people who have come up with the same, virtually identical idea, but, you know, from somewhere different, even if they're not fully on board in terms of how it can be achieved. So I think that's positive. That's what modern technology has allowed us to see. So, yeah.
Sorry, I don't know your name. I hate pointing to you.
Come on.
Okay, right, you're next.
Come on. Yeah, thanks. I think I crammed too much in my last question. My part of it, I wanted to know, why is Marxism, is Marxism an advance on pre-Marxian socialism? Right, what role is it actually playing? What's the difference, right? And if one is to keep Marxism in your back pocket today, what role should it play? Is it like a propaganda tool? Is it an analysis of society? Like, what is it actually? What should it be doing? If we're not going to lead with, you know, jargon, I understand that point, but what role should it play?
When I was suggested I do a talk on Marxism in this forum, I said, well, really, I'm not one of the people in the party who are sort of massively clued upon Marx in the way that some people are, know a certain amount about it. I wouldn't want to be asked questions. If I were to give a talk, I wouldn't want to be asked questions I couldn't answer. So you've asked me a question I can't answer now about pre-Marxian socialism. Don't know enough about that, really, to be able to. I mean, I'm sure some people here do. I don't know enough about that to be able to answer that. But, I mean, what role should it play now? Well, as I said, I think it does play a role for people who are interested in it, for the Philip Bounds of this world. He's interested in it. Alright, it didn't make him a member of the Socialist Party. And other people who, probably yourself, I don't know, who are interested in the sort of the theory of it, and who would like to sort of see how the theory applies to the practice. And for that reason, and you know, I think it's worth people knowing that our ideas are rooted in Marx, even though, you know, we don't sort of actively say, well, you know, you can only join or you can only really understand what we're about if you know Marx. I mean, I know a number of people who I put the socialist case to without mentioning Marx, who were sort of quite impressed by it. And I couldn't help feeling that if I were to say to them, this is what Marx advocates, they'd be sort of a little bit put off. So I think it's horses for courses. You know, for some people, it's a value to know that, you know, ideas are based on Marx. For other people, it's a no-no, it's a negative. I'm not sure if I can say more than that, really.
I've got you, Donny. Bill was next.
I just got a quick point. I believe a significant part of the downfall of freedom was a certain former party member. But probably not the time or place to go into that. But that is actually semi-related, because I think just in answer to Kumran's question, I mean, you know, as I said earlier, Marx was himself an active participant in the formation of working class organisations in this country, and what he brought was, contemporarily, he wrote newspaper articles that were a part of a rallying point, and he brought out an analysis of contemporary events and of an understanding of how capitalism worked. But also, I think that in terms of the early stages of the workers' movement, and it comes back to why party members early on will have very vehemently wanted to have a picture of Marx in their living room. It was as a marker of taking a factional position within the ongoing debates at that time. Where it was possible, I think this actually did happen, that you know, Ramsay MacDonald, William Morris, and Peter Kropotkin all spoke from the same platform. In the late 19th century, you know, before things ossified, and you know, before the Labour Party came out as the dominant, this is the path we're going down. And I think that's the other thing, is that there is a schismogenesis, I think David Graeber calls it. You know, being able to mark up, this is our patch, we're Marxists, and therefore this is what we think, which is both useful and harmful at the same time in different contexts.
Do you want to
say
anything on that, Howard? Paddy next, and then Ian.
Just to add to what Bill was saying, I think pre-Marx was the sort of utopian socialist, you know, what Marx and Engels called utopian socialist. So these were sort of, you know, well-off individuals who were well-meaning, very often, trying to start their own communities on sort of kind of socialist lines, or anarchist, you might say, but they generally fizzled out. So there was sort of social experiments, and there was a lot of that. So what was it that Marx and Engels brought to the mix? They brought clarity. You know, it's before them, it was like, wouldn't it be nice? It was all cloud cuckoo. What they brought was clarity and a roadmap and the mechanics to show how you could get to it in reality, and you could and show what political struggle would look like. So that's what they brought. Before them, it was all, wouldn't it be nice? And then after them, it was clarity.
Okay, Ian.
Yeah, picking up on that word, Paddy, mechanics, I think that's excellent, because you're asking, you know, Marx wrote so much stuff, you know, and in some parts of his life, he wasn't a very nice man. But what he did give us, right, as an intellectual methodology, he analysed the functioning and working of the capitalist system. Right, what people forget, he described it as production par excellence. Capitalist system, production par excellence. The problem is distribution. That's the problem with capitalism. But what he did with it, he analysed it like you would
deconstruct a working of an internal combustion engine. We analyse the capitalist system down to it, all its nuts and bolts.
Howard?
No, I can't agree with you. Yeah.
Richard, you were shaking your head.
Thank you, Joy, for putting me on this budget. I mean, distribution is a big problem with capitalism, but also so is accumulation of capital. Which is a form of distribution, but it's the way in which things are distributed through the accumulation of capital and its relationship with employment of the working class that is the actual problem with capitalism. It goes back to production, yeah, not simply to distribution. That was only why I was.
I won't do it again. Oh, okay, Brian.
Yeah, two things. One is, I think it's quite misleading to equate Marxism with socialism. There's a socialist tradition outside of Marxism, which is linked to Peter Kropotkin and the anarchist communism, which is, you know, the Freedom magazine. That's the first thing. Second thing is, there's a lot of this discussion about, you know, people when they write things that ordinary people can't understand. It's interesting, I gave you a copy of my book and you said you can't understand it. And I always try to write in a scholarly way that appeals to the public. Well, I can say for the last 20 or 30 years, I've been a subscriber to the Socialist Standard. And what I've always liked about the Socialist Standard, it deals with serious issues, it has really excellent reviews, and it's understandable. I can understand it. There's no jargon. It was interesting when the quote from Althusser, there's a lot of Marxist literature, you know, that's almost, you know, you're almost, it's gobbledygook. I can't understand it, you know. I think, and so I've always appreciated the Socialist Standard because it's actually trying to link, you know, real serious issues, and it's got, you know, quite complex concepts, you know, but at the same time it's trying to appeal to a wider public and get the message across, really.
I'm just going to take a leaf out of Mike's book and abuse my position as chair and say I love Henry James, but I can't understand him.
Pardon?
I love Henry James, but I can't understand him.
What, the Aspern papers?
Sorry?
The Aspern papers?
Well, pretty difficult language. The language is pretty damn difficult.
I've got that book. And
by the time you get to the end of the sentence, you've forgotten what the beginning was.
Maybe you should book it out.
Need editing.
I suppose I wouldn't agree with you, Brian, that it's misleading to equate Marxism with socialism if you want to do that. I mean, as I've been suggesting, I don't think we should, because it's more likely to put people off than anything, but some people anyway. But I do agree with you about the clarity of language of the Socialist Standard. You know, in connection with that, I was recently talking to some people I know associated with that Italian online journal called Anthropocene. And actually, a couple of them came to this gathering 2 years ago. I don't know if anyone remembers. And I don't know how much they understood. I mean, their English was dicey, to say the least. But anyway, they were sort of really enthused by the way we were able to put our ideas across so simply. Because if you read, you know, you read continental, what might you call it, philosophy, I mean, sometimes you seem to be going around in circles. It's incomprehensible. And indeed, you know, a lot of academic stuff in English is like that. But, you know, compared to that, the Socialist Standard is a breeze in the park. You can understand it perfectly, virtually always. So I'd certainly agree with you on that. And, I mean, a number of people have said to me, who I didn't really expect it from, or, you know, isn't it a good magazine to read? it reminds me of a number of years ago, probably in about 2015, my branch in Swansea had a new member join, he was really enthusiastic about all sorts of things to do with the party. And then when Jeremy Corbyn came along, and was going to sort of revolutionise the Labour Party, he said, look, I've got to leave, I've got to give Jeremy Corbyn a chance. He said, but, you know, the journal is absolutely terrific, I'll carry on reading it and so on. What can you do in circumstances like that? But yeah, just to sort of emphasise that, you know, that is the general sort of view that people who come across the Standard and start to read it have, you know, in a sense, whether they agree with it or not.
Okay, Bill?
Just a very quick point. Quite a few years ago, someone was coming along to get some copies of some old articles from the Socialist Standard and the teacher, and he took a look at them and he was printing them out, and he said, I wouldn't put these in front of my class. They wouldn't understand it. This is like the 1920s Socialist Standards.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because these were autodidacts who wasn't writing for a semi-literate public. But of course, from their point of view, they had conquered that language and they were damn well going to use it.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's a subtle difference between then and now in our style of writing.
Yeah. Anybody else?
Back in the conversation.
Any comments, contributions? You don't have to be questions.
Cup of tea?
Howard wants a cup of tea. Okay, thanks, Howard. It was a really good session. Thank you very much.